If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill at its lowest price ever and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first and only GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Based on advertised cash price for 30-day supply of medication only. Membership required. Fee not included, and billed separately. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Hello, and welcome to Take the Black, a podcast where we discuss all things fantasy and science fiction, books, movies, TV, all that good stuff, and especially Westeros, Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, House of the Dragon, and right now, currently, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. I'm Daniel Roman, the editor of winteriscoming.net, and I'm psyched to be joined by co-host Mark Nettles of House of Nettles. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing good. I mean, we got to watch A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. We got extra dragon people in the show. If you were just watching it for the first time and didn't read the book, so it's a good time over here.
Yeah, it's definitely extra dragon people. I feel like this is the Targaryen stands. This is your episode you've been waiting for. You know, got some pretty big reveals, some pretty big moments in episode 3, which is titled The Squire, which just aired as you are watching this. So do we want to like dive right into talking about this episode? What do you think?
I think I'm ready.
Okay, let's not keep the people waiting.
Jump all back right into Ashford Meadow and see what Sir Dunk and all the gang have been up to.
Yeah, so why don't we start with the end, which we wouldn't normally, but I feel like it'd be crazy not to because it kind of gives a little more context to everything else. So this episode ended with Egg rushing to tell Dunk that Tansel is being hurt by Arian Brightflame, the worst Targaryen in this show. And Dunk rushes in, he sees Arian break Tansel's finger, and then he gets in there and he fights, he punches Arian and kicks him, and then right before Arian takes his princely retribution, Egg drops the reveal that he is in fact Aegon Targaryen, Arian's younger brother, who has been missing, who we've heard has been missing, and he's been missing because he's been with Dunk. So Mark, you've read the novella. I've read the novella. How do you feel they did with this really important moment?
That was a great reveal for the fact that when it happened, it just froze on everyone's face. Like Arian, yeah, not really surprised, but going from Dunk to Tansel to even Raymond Fosaway, they're all like, well, what do you say now? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I thought the music was like kind of a hilarious choice. Like it's got like this very like operatic, dramatic music that kicks in right when Egg drops the "I didn't want to look like you, brother," and then it cuts to each of their faces and it's like almost comedic the way they did it.
Serious comedy.
this is dramatic comedy, but yeah, I thought that they did a really good job with that reveal. And you know, it's one of those things where, so when I read the novella the first time, I knew about about Aang's identity. I feel like it's been like this open secret, you know, the book came out like 30 years ago almost.
Yes.
But even if you know about it, the reveal works because Dunk doesn't know about it. And so it really hits him and you get to experience it through him, what that's like. Obviously, do you know anyone who didn't know that this was coming?
That's a good question. No, you know what? My mom, she didn't know it was coming. And she was completely flabbergasted, completely surprised. She's like, what do you mean? This is an extra Targaryen boy? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, totally. So Cody, one of our colleagues, he didn't know. And he was like, man, that reveal shocked me. So it's cool to hear, like, you know, from people who didn't know about Egg, which, like, it's easy to take for granted because the book's been out so long that everybody knows. But obviously that's not the case. And HBO has been trying so hard. They've spoiled lots of stuff about this show. But, like, I can tell you, like, behind the scenes a little bit, like, they've been trying really hard to not spoil the Egg reveal. And I think it probably paid off because I'm sure people are going to be talking about this episode for a long time to come.
Yeah, it's one of the two big reveals of the that will happen this season. So we got the first one at the midway point. And I love how sprinkled in between that in this episode and the previous episode, you keep getting clues to, like, hey, there's a missing Targaryen. He was squiring for his older brother. So we know he's a squire, and Egg just keeps you know, info dumping all this knowledge about all these people. Like, how would a lowly peasant that Dunkus thinks is from the Reach know so much about people from the Crownlands, from the Stormlands, up and down the Narrow Sea? Like, how would he know that?
Yeah, totally. I feel like the rewatch value is absolutely there for those first three episodes of this season, where, like, there are so many little clues about the Egg is not who he claims to be, you know, like, he talks so properly compared to, like, Dunk. And like you said, like, knowing, like, Sir Roland Crakehall, or no, Sir Donal of Duskendale, that his father owns the, like, half the crabbing fleet in Westeros. It's like, how does he know that? Well, because he's the prince of the Iron Throne. Like, that same scene, Dunk gets him a cider and he, like, kind of freaks out because there's a fly in it. He's like trying to get the fly out, and it's like, yeah, because he's a little princeling, he's not actually from the slums.
No.
So yeah, I love this reveal. I think they did it like chef's kiss. Like, it basically happens more or less exactly the same way that it does in the book, with a little more cross-cutting, because we see Egg go to the puppet show, and obviously you don't see that in the book. But there are a few scenes like that where we get Egg's POV in this episode.
I was just going to go off that. Just getting that first scene with Egg, and it continues from the previous episode, seeing how when he was looking at the squires and that initial joust, how they were handing the what's that little thing called? The joust?
The lance.
Yeah. how they were handing the lance to their knights. He's like, okay, he's studying it. Then we see the beginning of this episode, seeing him wake up early, get Thunder, the horse, the war horse, try to train him so he doesn't get too spooked, working on handing the lance. We see him with the sword twirling around. I'm like, all right, my man has a couple moves. The training in the training yard has been working a little bit.
Yeah, totally. So I was going to jump to that scene too, because that, like, I love that, like, giving that glimpse into Egg's POV, and like you said, it seemed like he got a little nervous. Like, Dunk got nervous last episode. Maybe Egg did too, seeing the squires, like, actually squiring and being like, oh, I'm going to have to do that.
Yeah.
But, like, what a charming, cute little scene of him, like, with Thunder, trying to get Thunder to listen to him and yelling at him, and, like, I love the bit where he's like, his father, I guess, says horses are stupid, and like, but I don't think that. And then the horse, like, nods. It's like, all right, that's pretty fun. Yeah. They introduced, I don't remember the dude's name, the one-eyed knight.
Right. Sir Risling. I can't remember his first name.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another thing where it's kind of filling in a little bit of a blank from the book, where he's relevant later, but you don't really ever see why he's relevant or how Egg knows him or anything like that. So I like that they expanded that in the show, and like, just this little interaction of this knight stumbling upon this kid who looks like he's like dressed in rags, and he's like, did you steal this? Yeah, fun stuff.
Yeah, that was great. And I think he, you know, the way Sir Risling was talking, it's like, okay, he seems like he's very devoted to the faith of the Seven, a man of honor. He's, you know, it seems like, hey, I'm going to be honorable in a situation that needs to, and I'm willing to do anything to defend that honor. I mean, we see that flashback. We see him take a lance and his splinters, take a splinter to the eye, and yep, still keep fighting in that joust. I'm like, that's why he's with maybe the maddest knight in the realm.
Yeah, totally. They've done such a good job with the flashbacks. Like, that's gruesome. It's also hilarious, that flashback. So good stuff. We also got, you know, just some kind of nice scenes of Dunk and Egg bonding, and Dunk almost getting like the chance to be a better knight to his squire than Sir Arlen maybe was to him. Like, you know, when Egg comes back and Dunk is like, where were you? And Egg says he was training, and he is like, isn't it my job to sew your patches and stuff? And Dunk's like, well, you don't know how to, like, go brush the horses, and like, you'll get hard salt beef after if you're lucky. And then Egg kind of grumbles about it, and then Dunk has a second thought, and he teaches him how to sew the things, and then he goes and gets eggs to make them breakfast sandwiches. Like, I didn't expect this show to be so endearing, I guess, the whole way through. Like, it's such a feel-good show.
Yeah, you got to see Dunk realize, hey, maybe I need to calm down a little bit. I'm yelling at the guy. He was just trying to go out here, do a little training. And, you know, like you said, just the fact that he took the time, he slowed down, took the time to teach Egg, so like he can be a better squire. He can be maybe a better squire than Dunk was.
Yeah. A little step up. Yeah, totally. What did you think of kind of their little run in with Tansel and them like imitating each other?
I think Dunk needs to learn how to make jokes a little better. He was trying.
He was
definitely one of them was funnier than the other. But yeah. And it just Dunk's interaction also with Tansel, her looking at him as he's trying to get the merchant to understand he wants the eggs. Please don't chop the head off the goose, please. He's squatted down like he's about to poop. He's like, oh. Hi, girl. I like this.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I like the awkwardness of the whole Dunk Tansel relationship. They've really done a good job with. And obviously, this episode is also kind of the big payoff for that, where he throws himself into harm's way because he sees she's in trouble. And, you know, he's a knight. And knights swear to protect innocent people. And she's an innocent person. So he just dives in without a second thought.
Yeah, and he did, like you said, he did it just because. It didn't matter that she has been looking at this man crazy for the past two episodes, that it does not seem like he had a chance in the world. Like, she needed help.
Yeah, totally. So another kind of interesting development in this episode was that Plumber approaches Dunk and tries to get him to not throw a joust, but win a joust that is being thrown. What did you think of that whole storyline of Plumber trying to pressure Dunk into basically doing a rigged fight that would have benefited him? Like, he needed the money and stuff, but that's, you know, would have besmirched his honor and whatever. So, like, how did you feel about that?
And that's a little different from the novella, this whole interaction between Plumber and this decision to possibly throw this joust. I will say this, Dunk is a better man than me. Dunk is 100%. Because I'm not saying I would have done it, but I don't think I would have been so quickly to dismiss it in his head, because it seems like Dunk, there was never a chance of him besmirching his honor, just doing that joust to get an easy win. He wanted to earn it, and I appreciate that about Dunk, but even he told Egg, if I lose this match, like, I'm not going to be a knight anymore. I'm going to lose my war horse. I'm going to lose my armor. I'm only going to have one horse. You're not going to be able to be my squire anymore. Like, well, we can't be on the same horse trying to make it to the next town. And he loses his sword, too. He's going to have a pocket knife. Like, that's not going to work.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's a testament to how seriously Dunk is taking, you know, his honor and being a good knight, that like he's in that situation where he, you know, he could lose everything with what, if he loses the next fight, he loses everything, and he still won't take a rigged fight and do something like that. I mean, we didn't see him actually fully make the decision. He's Plummer, it kind of leaves it with Plummer just expectantly like staring at him when they cross paths from then on. But yeah, like, but then the stuff with Arianne happens. So we can pretty safely say that that's kind of in the rear view now. Like they're, that's not going to be relevant from here on out.
Decision was made for him at that point.
Yep.
So would you make that same, would you do it or would you not do it if you were in Sir Duncan the Tall's shoes?
I feel like I wouldn't. I'd probably think about it a little harder, but I don't know. I do understand where Dunk's coming from. Like, I think there's something to like the hedge knight who like being a knight is all he knows. It's all he wants. He came from Flea Bottom. It's so different than the way we've seen knights in this series or in this franchise before. And like, I feel like if I had Dunk's experiences, like I would probably do the same thing. Like I'd like to think I would, let's put it that way. Cause you know, he talks about this later in the episode when he's broing out with Raymond Fossaway, where Raymond Dunk talks about the horse that Arianne killed that we're going to talk about in a minute. And Raymond, he says to Raymond, like, it's hard to believe a knight would be so dishonorable. And Raymond's just like, why is that hard to believe? Because in his world they just are. So yeah, I love that, like the hedge knight's almost the purest kind of knight here. Like that's cool.
All you have is honor.
Exactly. Yeah, totally.
If you're Jaime Lannister, then honor is a horse. So
yeah totally. I mean, Jaime Lannister and you know, his whole clinging to his honor in specific ways is like one of the most compelling things about him. But yeah, obviously he's kind of the poster child for I'm maybe not the most honorable knight except when I want to be.
Yes.
So I brought up the horse a second ago, and I do want to ask you, what did you think of the joust with Arianne and I think Sir Humphrey Harding? And what did you think of the fallout of that joust where the crowd rushes the field and starts throwing stones at Arianne?
Mm-hmm. That is probably why we got the Arianne we got when he was at the puppet
mm-hmm.
show. But and I do feel like I don't think Arianne Brightflame had the attention to do that craziness when he first got there, but when he looked into the stands and his father wasn't there to kind of keep him in check, he was like, he's not here to support me. He's off looking for my older brother again, not paying attention to me. Let me come out here and make a name for myself. So he turned to the joust, called out. What was the knight he called out again?
I think it was Sir Humphrey Harding.
Yeah, Sir Humphrey. I keep getting confused with the other knight, another knight in there. So
there are a lot of knights in this.
A lot of sirs and lords. Yeah. I'm like, which sir? Are you a sir or a lord? I guess you're both, but completely dishonorable, not what you expect a knight to do. And you can see how the whole crowd agreed with my assessment, with our assessment, like, hey,
yeah, totally.
not the best move, my guy.
Yeah, totally. You know, they're not there to see horses get injured and die because someone was dishonorable. And you know, especially a prince, where like this episode kind of peeled back the curtain a little bit on how the realm is viewing the Targaryens now, because, you know, this show is set halfway between House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones. All the dragons are dead, but the Targaryens still have the throne. We know that in a few generations, they're going to get ousted and Robert Baratheon will take the throne instead. So here we kind of see like House Targaryen, like clinging badly to its power. You know, and it's interesting that like Arianne acted up because Maekar wasn't there, because like Baelor was still there, you know, like he didn't care enough to like not do it in front of his uncle, the heir to the Iron Throne. But I guess that's not quite the same as daddy's disapproval.
Exactly. Everybody want to make their dad proud, and dad's not there. It's like, oh man, now I gotta act out and kill a knight's horse and shatter shatter his leg pretty good. His leg, you heard the crunch. It did not sound the best. I'm not sure about.
Yep. Yep. He's. I think we can safely say he is out of the tourney at this point. Sir Humphrey Harding. We hardly knew ye. but yeah. So that's all really interesting stuff. And I think, you know, that's also, like you said, that's how we got the Arian that we got later in the episode too, with Tansel, because I don't think there either he necessarily walked in being like, I'm gonna raise hell here at that puppet show. I think he walked in, he saw that they were doing a mock dragon fight, and like, he'd already had a bad day. Mm-hmm. And he's certainly not gonna, you know, where a prince of House Targaryen got rushed by a mob essentially. And then he walks into a puppet show where someone's killing a dragon, and he just isn't going to stand for that. So
he can't stand for the fake puppet show. And I do want to give a quick shout out to the actor that plays Egg Dexter, because after what happened to that horse, the emotion on his face of how angry he was and how he was like, oh, you don't understand, Dunk. That guy is, he's a bad egg. He's a bad prince. Bad dragon. How do you know all that? Well, we found out because you're also a Targaryen, and you don't like Prince Arion either.
Yeah, this was a really good episode for Dexter Saul Ansel. Mm-hmm. There were a few scenes where like he really sold the emotion. Like he kind of had the full range here, like from the beginning where he's the bright-eyed squire who's like, he's being more honest to the horse than he is to Dunk, you know, because he talks about his dad to the horse and all this stuff, and like, meanwhile, he's told Dunk his dad's dead and whatever. But like, we see him there, like he never feels more like a little kid to me than when he's pretending to train, you know, like when he was sword fighting, yelling about the black fires in the last episode, and here where he's running up Sir Duncan with the lance. Like, he feels like such a little kid. And then we see the anger and the emotion, and you know, he's shouting like, kill him, to Sir Humphrey Harding when he's about Arion. Like, he's shouting for Arion to die, which is a little messed up. That's your brother, but also maybe fair, knowing Game of Thrones and how spoiled princes can be. And then to like regal Egg by the end, where he calls out the guards by name and tells them to leave Dunk alone.
And they listen before they about to curb stomp him. I was like, whoa, this is a different type of show. What's going on?
yeah. Well, I don't remember, because it's been a minute since I read The Hedge Knight. I don't remember them going to curb stomp Dunk. I don't think so. But when they got him down there, I was like, oh man, this is, they had the intensity. You know, that's the first. This has been a light show so far, you know, like it's leaned into the comedy. We've gotten poop jokes. We've gotten Sir Arlen, you know, waving his sword in the wind, like all these different things. And then that moment is where it's like, oh yeah, don't forget, this is Game of Thrones. There's no music in that scene. Dunk is in the most danger he's ever been in. And then Egg comes in and he's just like, leave him alone. Oh, I love that Dunk is like, you're an idiot. Get out of here.
Oh, you're in it.
Yeah. So I did want to back up just a sec too to talk about Duncan Sir Raymond Fossaway. What did you think of that whole kind of tent conversation where they're drinking Fossaway cider and Raymond just goes off on the Targaryens?
Yes. Yeah, so first of all, I bet that cider tastes really good. Egg would have appreciated that. Yep. That might have been one of the best conversations in helping the audience understand how everyone else feels about House Targaryen, or how a lot of people feel. Because at the end of the day, we hear about this war that happened before, and we hear Egg sing about the Blackfyre Rebellion, which is the civil war that happened a few years, decade or so before this main series.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so just to understand, like, hey, think about all the people who would have died fighting just for one half of the dragon family to be on the throne over the other. Their lives really wouldn't have changed. Maybe a few lords got more lands. Maybe there was a squire that became a knight. But what did we gain by having this three-headed dragon over this three-headed dragon at the end of the day? Win or lose.
Yeah, totally. I like how much they're sneaking in bits of Blackfyre lore, because the Blackfyre Rebellion, you know, it isn't super important to this Duncan Egg book, The Hedge Knight, but it is very important for the next two, the Sworn Sword and the Mystery Knight. So like, we're gonna hear a lot more about it in season two and then in season three, provided they get season three, which, like, of course they're gonna get season three.
Yeah.
But yeah, they also talked about it a little bit with Egg sang like this vulgar song at the beginning that I thought was pretty funny, where he's like, he's whittling and it's basically the history of the Blackfyre Rebellion.
Yes.
And talking about how the Blackfyres lost it and like the specific ways the armies maneuvered to lose it. So the Blackfyres, just if you are watching this podcast and you aren't familiar, like, look this up, the Blackfyre Rebellion, because it's not going to spoil anything for the show for you, but it's kind of cool backstory to know. Essentially, the Aegon the Fourth was Aegon the Unworthy, and he had a lot of bastard children, and he legitimized them all on his deathbed, and one of them he gave Blackfyre, which is the sword of Aegon the Conqueror. So then that one was like, well, I should be king over the meek one who is currently sitting the Iron Throne. And it turned into, I guess, the second civil war in like 100 years, because this is not that long after the Dance of the Dragons. So yeah, the Targaryens just keep trying to kill each other, and the realm is bleeding for it.
Yes, it's like, how is it making our lives better? I guess another cool thing to think about is, at this tourney, it most likely would be people who supported the Red Dragon, which were House Targaryen, over the other side, House Blackfyre. Because why would you go to a tourney when you supported the other side and you know a quarter of House Targaryen is going to be there?
Yeah, that's fair. I didn't really think about that, but probably, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because the other stories get into who supported which side. Yeah. and kind of what the feelings about that still are. And like, there's a lot of lingering resentment in the lifetime of Duncan Egg over how that all went down. So yeah, I bet you're right. I bet there aren't a ton of Blackfyre supporters there. And this is also more, you know, a little more recent than the Sworn Sword, which is like a year or two after this. So yeah, it's interesting stuff. Yeah. Raymond really went off.
Yeah. And I want to say, we talked about, I can't remember if we talked about this before, but I know when George R. R. Martin wrote The Hedge Knight, he didn't have the Blackfyre Rebellion in his mind. It wasn't something to conceive. Yeah. That's why, another reason, in the novella, you don't get a peep of it. So it's good that they were able to backtrack and add those breadcrumbs for us about the Blackfyre Rebellion, him singing the song, just a little bit more of how people feel about House Targaryen, so we can understand, like, okay, how this second civil war in the last 100 years could have gotten started.
Totally. I feel like I always forget, because it feels like A Song of Ice and Fire has just been out for so long, you know, like, I started reading them when I think the fourth book came out. So like, there were already four books, like, they were all out. Like, clearly they were out before everything else in this series. But The Hedge Knight, he actually wrote it while he was still writing A Clash of Kings. So like, he had only written A Game of Thrones, hadn't written any of the rest of the series. So like, it's interesting to think about like Maekar and Arion and Baelor as like some of the first other Targaryens aside from Daenerys that he ever really fleshed out. And Rhaegar, and, you know, the ones who are relevant to the first Game of Thrones books. Aside from them, like, these guys are the next closest. And yeah, the Blackfyre Rebellion, like, that's deep cut lore. Like, we're never going to see a Blackfyre Rebellion show.
No, it would take too much to try to make that all make sense.
Yeah, totally. And like, there are ways it's coming in a little bit in Game of Thrones. Like, there are theories that there's a certain character in A Dance with Dragons who's related to the Blackfyres. But like, yeah, I think this show is doing a better job of tying into the wider franchise than House of the Dragon. What do you think of that? Because like, House of the Dragon added this whole prophecy thing from Aegon, and like, you know, they've had season two ended with essentially this Weirwood dream Daemon had where he saw Daenerys and all this stuff. They were trying very hard to be like, we're a Game of Thrones prequel. Yeah. How do you feel about the way House of the Dragon did it versus the slightly more subtle way A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is?
Definitely enjoying how Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is doing it. I think House of the Dragon, maybe instead of trying to tie into the lore, all the cool book lore of history that's still like close to that civil war, They try to jump and tie this one thing to this prophecy in a show that ended in a way not everyone enjoyed the most, which, I mean, it's still a great show. Game of Thrones, great television show. The ending wasn't everybody's favorite. So it was like, oh, okay, why are you tying it back into this? Like, we're doing, you're doing something new now. Like, we all know it's connected, but this is something new. It would have been great to try to tie it in to some other lore or something nearby so we can all, you know, fans can learn something new. It's like, no, you're retreading that same wheel, and it kind of didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I thought that the Aegon's dream was intriguing because it's like, is this a thing from the Song of Ice and Fire books we haven't learned yet? I feel like that's kind of an open question of, is that a thing George planned? Was Aegon had a dream? But I do think that the method A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms is using of fleshing out, like you said, like the immediate lore around it, rather than being like, and we're, don't forget, we're related to Game of Thrones with, like, you know, lore that is not relevant for 200 years. I think it's making for a better experience, like, in the franchise, because, like, it, so this episode is a really good example of how it still feels like it is painting the picture of, like, the fall of the Targaryen dynasty and, like, how that looked, like how we got from Rhaenyra Targaryen to Robert Baratheon. You know, this feels like it is giving us an idea of that without being on the nose about it. And yeah, I really like that. I think that's a really good choice.
Yes. So we need hopefully they tie more cool things in this season and all the future seasons. I know we're gonna get, because I know they're gonna do, let's 3, 5, 6, keep going.
Yeah, I mean, that would, there was some stuff, I can't remember if we talked about this last week, that they talked about wanting to do. Now we can say the full spoiler of this if we did talk about it. So there were reports that, like, Ira Parker, the showrunner, has seen outlines for like 15 of these Duncan Egg books. Like, Martin has only written 3, even being optimistic that he'll write a few more, because he has been working on 2 apparently. He's not going to, there's no way he's going to write all 15 Duncan Egg books, I think. But the show, like Parker has said, it'd be cool to, like, do like 5 seasons, come back in a few years and do 5 seasons with Egg the Young Prince, and then come back in 5 years and do Egg the King. I don't know.
Maybe we can get 2 or 3 of these other Blackfyre rebellions in there. We get a older Egg. That's a cool thought. Do I think it logistically how well it would go for that?
Yeah. He said he got eye rolls at HBO when he suggested it, but, like, my heart of hearts, I would love to see it.
We'll see how the show does with the later seasons. I think if it's anything like this, I think, hey, I'll be all for it. I don't know if HBO is listening to me, but I am for more Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah. So cool. I do want to ask, there are 2 little other kind of foreshadowing bits of things they drop in here that I want to bring up, because they're also examples of, like, how this show is foreshadowing stuff like we may never see. But it's still, they're doing it because it feels relevant here. So, like, the fortune teller, what did you think of that fortune teller giving Egg the not very nice prophecy?
I'm like, why would you do that to that young man without going to, why would you tell that young man all that? I love how Dunk just immediately laughed it off, like, but he's like, you know, you're a prince, you know, he's way down the line of succession, and somebody says, oh, you're gonna be king and you're gonna burn and nobody's gonna like you. Like, hold up now, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, totally. And Dunk doesn't even know he's royalty at that point, so he just thinks it's hilarious. So it's interesting talking about, like, the overall story of Aegon's life, because, like, we know about it from, like, the World of Ice and Fire. Like, the lore is out there, but it doesn't really feel like spoilers for A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, because it's so far removed that it's like, we'll probably never see it in this show that's mostly about his young adventures. Like, so it, for people watching or listening, the thing you want to look up if you want to know about the prophecy stuff is Summerhall. That is the thing that they referenced, a very specific thing, and Egg does not have a very happy ending, unfortunately, but that's many years after the show.
And it's like, that's like a middle-aged.
Yeah, totally.
Age. Yeah.
Yeah, he'll have kids by that point. He'll be a king by that point. It's way, way down the road. Like I said, so far that it's weird to have characters like that where it's like, let's talk about what happens to them later on that is so far removed. Like, it's not going to spoil literally anything from this show to even mention it.
Like you said, if you're a fan, you've probably seen somebody make a video on the tragedy at Summer Hall. Yeah. You've seen a video, you've seen the image. You know it doesn't end well for House Targaryen. Even if you watch Game of Thrones, it was mentioned. So
yeah,
not the best ending, but getting to see his life and how he got to that point. That's the exciting part. It's like you can totally know the end, but what's the stories in between?
Yeah, totally. Especially when it's as, you know, untraditional and interesting a life as like Egg is leading, where he's, you know, he ran away from being a prince to go squire for some hedge knight who like had barely any money to his name and like not sworn to any lord, like sleeping outside under a tree, and like he thinks it's the greatest thing ever.
No, I just want to bring up that little speech when they're on the hill and they're looking out of the tourney. That was heartwarming. Yeah,
love that.
You know what? I can only imagine Egg being in King's Landing, being at Summer Hall, having to be the prince. And in that moment, he just, I have my dreams to fight for my lord, get a little piece of land, marry my lord's second most beautiful daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
Only because, Sir Dunk, you're going to get the most beautiful daughter. Then I'll get the second one. You know, yeah. He wants to be with his buddy. Like, that's an awesome dream.
Yeah, totally, totally. And so knowing this stuff about Egg, there are also a bunch of scenes in earlier episodes where, like, so the end of the premiere, when Dunk is telling him what it will mean for him to be a squire and how he'll make sure he has food and clothes on his back, and like it zooms in on Egg's face and he's just like got like wondrous eyes on a little bit. Like, that's the context for that. Like, he's used to being a prince. He's not used to being leveled with from someone in this way, where they're just like, on his own merits, they're saying, hey, you're good enough, you can come be, you know, be my helper if you want, you know, like that level of honesty and transparency. Like, I feel like, you know, we'll see more of this as the show goes on, but like, what sort of effect would that have on a young prince versus someone who's just totally coddled, who grows up in, you know, the Red Keep?
Yeah, we definitely see he wants to make his own name, and he's getting that opportunity. He got his call to action. He asked, can I be your squire? My man gave him the opportunity. It's like, yes, I'm here. I have to be. And we see that, like, this episode, that he wants to be a good squire and become a great knight.
Totally. Totally. So another reference. This is the last one that I wanted to bring up, and I want to get your opinion on. So during the Raymond Fosaway conversation, he talks about how Maekar went away looking for his two wayward sons, Daeron Targaryen, who we'll probably be talking about more soon. Sure. You know, Daeron was not in this episode, but he is in this show, so we'll be talking about him shortly. And then he mentions the other sons. So there's Arion, who's awful, and then there's one who went to the Citadel. So this is a very sly, good, this is the sort of Game of Thrones reference I am here for.
Yes.
What'd you think of that?
Yes, we might know a maester, and his name might be Aemon from the Wall in the Game of Thrones show in our main series books. It's always great to get a maester Aemon reference.
Totally.
It's always great. That's the type of references we need. I like how Raymond Fosway was like, yeah, that one son they had to get rid of and get him to the Citadel. Like, why are we treating Citadel like we're getting rid of problem children? You gotta be smart to go there.
Just yeah, because totally.
You gotta go with a sword doesn't mean he doesn't have a good mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we see him as, again, the lore of the franchise. Like, he's a good, honorable person, that Maester Aemon, and we know him from Game of Thrones. He's pretty great, you know, serving honorably in the Night's Watch and to however old he was, like 100
plus.
Yeah, totally. And like, so for people who've seen, obviously, Game of Thrones, which I'm just gonna assume if you're watching this, like, you've seen Game of Thrones, otherwise what are you doing here?
But stay here
If you haven't watched it, stay here and watch Game of Thrones and come back. So Maester Aemon has a line in that, kind of on his deathbed, because spoiler, he's old, he dies of old age, where he says, like, "Egg, I dreamed I was young again." You know, and that was the first callback to Duncan Egg, kind of in the original show, or one of the first ones. So yeah, it's a nice full circle moment to get the Maester Aemon nod in this episode. I did the Leonardo DiCaprio meme and pointed at the TV at that. I will not lie.
Hopefully, maybe in a future season, maybe we can go to the Citadel and potentially see a Maester Aemon. I think that would be awesome. Man,
I hope so. So that's, you know, the books kind of skip Maester Aemon. So, like, you know, there are some time gaps between these novellas. And we know that Duncan Egg visited him at the Citadel. They talk about it, but I think it's between this one and the second one, the Sworn Sword. Sworn Sword says they visited him, but we never actually see them visit. So yeah, that's like, if there's one, you know, like page to screen change, I'm like, please make. Yeah, I would love to see them actually visit Aemon.
Yes, yes. At least get a glimpse. We don't even got to see his face. It'd be one of those things, like, we'll just know.
Montage it. Give us a flashback, a montage, whatever. Just let us see them there at the Citadel. So yeah, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, episode 3, The Squire. Good stuff. I feel like this one is really going to get people talking, because obviously the whole egg twist at the end is, like you said, there are two big twists in this story, and that's the first one. Yeah. What do you have, anything else you want to say about this episode? We've now talked at least as long as the actual episode runtime.
Yes.
Anything else you want to talk about?
I just want to reiterate just that conversation that Sir Raymond Fossoway, I thought it was a great way to bring in how other potential lords and knights, how they felt about House Targaryen, how everyone isn't all peaches and cream. Everyone isn't falling over their knees. There's some people who are resentful, even that were on their side, about having these continuous civil wars that keep happening, fighting for one dragon over the other. So I thought that was a great insert to this episode. And what about you? What part of the episode stood out the most, or that you enjoyed the most?
I mean, I think, man, I'm just enjoying so much of this show. It's honestly hard to pick a favorite part of this episode. I think the end stuff with the puppet show. The puppet show into the confrontation with Arion is one of those scenes that I've just been like waiting to see on screen. Like, ever since they announced they were doing this show, like, that was one of like two scenes where I'm like, that I can't wait to see what they do for that. And they nailed it. They totally nailed it. But I do think probably the scenes I've thought about the most are that conversation with Raymond and the way the crowd reacts to Arion. I've thought a lot about like the Targaryen on the decline of it all that this episode really gets into. Because I think Raymond too, that might be one of the first times, at least in this show or House of the Dragon, I can't remember if anyone said it in Game of Thrones, where he calls them aliens who came and conquered their country essentially. Yeah. I don't recall too often people in the other shows leaning into the idea that the Targaryens are not from Westeros, right? Like, they came from Valyria. They lived on the island of Dragonstone, which was the farthest west outpost of Valyria. Mm-hmm. And then they took over the Seven Kingdoms, but like, they're not native to the Seven Kingdoms. And I know that like Game of Thrones touches on this a little bit with Daenerys and Meereen and all of that. But I can't recall anyone saying it as explicitly in the dialogue. And it's like, that shows kind of how bad the opinion is starting to sway against them, that like people are saying stuff like that without, like, Dunk doesn't even say, "Hey, that's treason," you know, like that's the sort of thing. In one of the other shows, it's like, you could get your head cut off for saying that. Like, nobody even says that here. So
maybe that's why they're trying to ingratiate themselves, doing these small tourneys to be like, "Hey, we're just like you," kind of.
Yeah, yeah, totally. A lot of good stuff in this episode. Yes. I have a feeling I'm going to watch it a few more times, because it's just, yeah, it had it all. It had it the edge of your seat stuff, the heartwarming stuff with Duncan Egg, you know, some interactions with Tansel and that dragon puppet, all sorts of stuff.
Good puppet. Great puppet.
Awesome.
If that's what we got from this episode, remember the puppet looked awesome.
Yeah. And something I didn't notice. So I've seen this episode twice now. Something I didn't notice on my first watch. I think when the puppet dies, there's like a very subtle sound effect that's like one of the actual like dragon noises from the other shows. I gotta go back and double check that, but like I feel like the love is just there in this series. They love what they're doing with this show.
Yeah, I'll definitely be going back and pausing like, all right, let me double check that.
yeah but yeah, so great episode of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. We will be talking about obviously the next episode next week, same time right after it airs, but there is one other thing that I think we should at least like get into a little bit that's huge news in the fantasy space right now.
Yeah.
Should we dive into that?
I'm ready to talk about some news coming from Apple TV.
Yeah. So the biggest news this week is that Apple TV acquired the rights to adapt Brandon Sanderson's Cosmere. So if you're not familiar with Brandon Sanderson, I'm sorry, this is probably going to hurt your head a little bit as we explain what the Cosmere is and all this stuff. But essentially, so Sanderson, one of the most prolific authors in fantasy, has written dozens of books. The Cosmere is like the MCU of fantasy books, interconnected universe, lots of different stories, more than two dozen books in it at this point. And Apple TV got the rights to it. And Sanderson's been trying to get it made for years, like specific projects, but this is a bigger deal because they got the whole thing. They're starting with making movies out of Mistborn, a TV show out of the Stormlight Archive. I could ramble about this a lot. So Mark, I'm going to pass the ball to you and say, what did you make of this news? Like, what was your reaction when you saw this?
Yes. Now, in terms of before the news, I have to admit, I haven't read the most Brandon Sanderson, but yeah. I thought it was good, especially a good choice for studios, because I truly believe Apple TV really does make high quality television shows. Now they got to get more people watching Apple TV. I think that's always the crux. Like, hey, it's on Apple TV. It's like, I don't have it. It's like, well, you need to get it because they got cool TV shows over there.
Totally.
If there was a studio to do something of such high fantasy, I think that is the place to be. I know those books are big. There's a lot of material in there, but I am excited to see like where they start. And I know there was some talks. Was it about a potential, like you said, movies also?
Yeah. So yes. They're going full on cinematic universe here. So, Mistborn and Stormlight are his two main series in this universe. Mistborn, there are multiple eras. So it's like the first one is a finished trilogy. It's already done. It's kind of like an almost Renaissance post-apocalyptic fantasy. And that one they're making into movies. Stormlight is his like big magnum opus. He wanted to write his own sort of Wheel of Time. You are not kidding that they are big books. This is the most recent one, Wind and Truth. It is massive. It's around 1300 or 1400 pages. This thing is gigantic.
Yeah, that's a weapon.
It is a weapon. You could defend yourself with this in a pinch. So they're making that one into a TV show, which I think is the right choice, because you just could not make a movie that would be any good out of these books, because there's just way too much in them. And they're kind of slow burn, the Stormlight Archive. He really takes his time with those books. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you that Apple TV is like the perfect fit for this. And apparently Brandon Sanderson does too, because he already weighed in on this news, because he is like, you know, he's very active in his fan community. He talks about this stuff a lot. He went on Reddit the day after the news was announced and said, hey, I guess you saw the news. I met with basically all of the big studio heads in Hollywood recently. So he went around shopping this to all these different studios, and he picked Apple TV because he had multiple offers, and he said the exact same things you're saying, that like they make less shows, but their shows are all seem to be really good and like very creative driven, like very good partnerships with creatives. And he just felt like that is what he needed to do this adaptation the way he wanted it done. And like, he's writing, producing, they gave him like an insane amount of creative control for this. So like the initial report said like more than like George R. R. Martin has with the Westeros shows or J.K. Rowling with the Harry Potter things, which sounds really good. What do you think of that?
Great that he has, because you should have a lot of creative control when it comes to something that, you know, you created, you spent all this time. Who knows it better than him? Well, probably probably somebody who's more obsessed with it than him. but in terms of the creation process, it can have its negatives in terms of drawbacks of, since you are the creator, you feel like, you want every little thing and want it to fit a certain way. And it's like, sometimes what's good in a novel isn't good in on the screen, big or small. And will you be willing to accept that criticism of, hey, we can't do it that way? Not saying we can't do it, but not the way you envision it when you write a book.
Yeah,
he's a smart guy, of course. So I know he'll be able to like probably acquiesce some things. Like, okay, I'm gonna listen to you.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because like, so he was a consultant on The Wheel of Time because he wrote the last three books of it. He had kind of a contentious relationship with it as it went on, though, because he didn't really like a lot of the choices that were made on the show, and he felt like he was kind of being ignored when he was a consulting producer, and they didn't listen to him a whole lot. This is going to be different, and I do agree with you. I feel like it can be tricky with having an author so heavily involved. Because like, are they going to be too precious for, you know, changes that have to happen? At the same time, we've seen the other side of that where shows just make kind of arbitrary changes that make things worse. I'm looking at you, Blood and Cheese. not to just keep shitting on House of the Dragon, but looking at you, Blood and Cheese.
We're looking.
I feel like with something like this, though, where it's they're adapting not just a story but a cinematic universe, they're adapting a franchise where it's multiple stories. Like, they're probably gonna have multiple shows, multiple movies. This will, if this pans out, it will be Apple's flagship fantasy property. It will. But I feel like with something like that, you need like an architect, right? Like Kevin Feige was for Marvel. So I feel like, you know, because you need someone where it's like, if they're making Mistborn and they're going to exclude something that's relevant to one of the other books, or they're going to change something that's relevant to one of the other series, like, they need somebody who knows what's what to be able to say, hey, just so you know, if we change that, it's going to affect season three of the Stormlight Archive show.
Let's figure out what direction we're going now.
Yeah, totally. So I'm hesitantly, you know, not hesitantly, I'm stoked about this news, I won't lie. I've read a lot of Brandon Sanderson books. I've enjoyed them for quite a while, and he's been trying to get any sort of adaptation off the ground for like 10 years, like a lot of years at this point. So I'm happy for him that he finally locked down the one it seems like he wanted.
Yes. So I'm excited to see it. We'll see how, especially just how long it's going to take, because I mean, this is going to be all the fantasy, all the CGI, everything's going to be thrown at a table. So how long it's going to take to develop, to get these projects to start coming out?
Yeah, totally. And it's going to be interesting to see. So the other side of him being the architect is, will he be a bottleneck on the production? Because he is writing the screenplay for the Mistborn movie himself. He said he's taking a step back from his books to do that for the next like 5 or 6 months. Write the Mistborn screenplay.
I mean, he writes like 5 books a day, so
totally. That's the sort of thing where, like, for a normal author, I'd be like, oh my god, this is gonna be Game of Thrones all over again. But Brandon Sanderson, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, he can pull it off. And he's been, so I interviewed him last year when Wind and Truth came out, and he talked to me about how he had been practicing screenplays because he felt he wasn't good enough at them. So like, this feels like, okay, he had been practicing, now he has the chance to really do the one and do it the way he wants it. Let's see if the practice paid off. So yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be interesting to watch, at the very least, how this all develops.
Yes, 100%.
So that's the big news outside of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. You have anything else you want to say about this Because we've been talking for almost an hour at this point.
Doubled the episode, and we got a little news on at the end. I think we're good. I think we're able to touch on everything that the Squire needed. You know, interesting to touch on this project as well. So I think kudos to us.
Yeah. Well done. Well done, Mark. Well done, us. All right. Well, for all of you out there watching, this has been Take the Black. Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure to like, subscribe, check us out on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, on YouTube. Watch us on YouTube. All the usual places you get your podcasts, we live there. And we will be breaking down the next episode of A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms after it airs next Sunday. Check out winteriscoming.net, where we're writing about these sorts of things literally every single day. Check out Mark's stuff on House of Nettles, where he is giving really great opinions and hot takes on Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, all sorts of other shows and movies. And yeah, we will see you next week when we find out what sort of trouble Dunk has gotten himself into.
Yeah, it's the repercussions.
All right, take care, all.